I'm going to go ahead and turn to the first page, guys. So, look at these people. Why do you think that they're... What are they right now?
Crying.
Mm-hmm.
You think they're sad?
Yeah.
How come you think they're sad?
Because their grandpa died.
Mm-hmm.
Megan Mooney is a bereavement counselor at the Healing Farewell Center. That's a funeral home in St. Joseph, Missouri. She uses a coloring book to teach three youngsters about the death of their grandma.
This is the part I really want you guys to pay attention to this one, okay? Yeah. On this page. So when we go in just a little bit, your grandma's going to be in one of these. It's called the casket.
In mainstream American culture, the subject of death is still fairly taboo, so it's hard to talk about it without getting uncomfortable. That's why Megan has been teaching classes to help kids understand what is death and giving them a chance to ask those burning questions that might annoy or even upset their grieving parents.
Do you guys have any questions about death?
How do you feel like you're going to death?
How do you feel like when you're dying?
Yeah.
Is that what you mean?
Yeah.
I'm Gina Kaufman, and today's Central Standard on KCUR is inspired by an event at Union Station. It's a symposium on the role death plays in life, and it got us thinking about the people in Kansas City who work in the death industry. If you can call it that, movies like Bernie, starring Jack Black as a funeral director, and TV shows like 6 Feet Under, about siblings who inherited their father's funeral business, shone a spotlight on a kind of transaction that most of us only think about when we have to. But what is new in the industry? We'll find out in a second. Of course, we know that the royals are on people's minds. Don't worry. Later in the show, we'll look at the story of Sung Woo for guidance on how to be a model Royals fan, win or lose. For now, I'd like to start by talking with Mark Harris for some national perspective. He's the author of Grave Matters, A Journey Through the Modern Funeral Industry to a Natural Way of Burial. Hi, Mark.
Hi, Gina.
What inspired you to look into the funeral industry?
I used to be a syndicated columnist with the Los Angeles Times, and it was my job to write about environmental issues every week to fill a space of 750 words. And it was in the course of keeping my ear to the ground for story ideas that I heard about this cemetery in South Carolina in the western part of the state, where the dead were essentially buried in the woods. Bodies went into the ground unembalmed, sometimes wrapped in nothing but a winding bedsheet. There was no burial vault at the bottom of the grave. There were no upright headstones. The whole idea was to allow the body to decay and become part of this living, natural southern forest. So it sounded like a great idea for a couple of columns. So I went down to Ramsey Creek Preserve in the western part of the state and spent an afternoon there, and was completely, my ideas about death and dying were really transformed. I came back to Pennsylvania, my home here, to write about it. And the more I researched about what was happening on this cemetery plot down there in the woods, the more I saw it was tied up into significant changes that were coming to death care in the United States.
What kinds of significant changes? I mean, what is the bigger picture that you were discovering?
You have changes in the cemetery themselves, and we can talk about that. So there are these natural cemeteries like that one in South Carolina, which was the first modern natural cemetery in this country. So now there are over 200 of these natural cemeteries across the country. It was also tied into the rising cremation rate. This year was the first year that more Americans will be cremated than buried, and in part, that's driven by environmental concerns. I also met a group of women who were traveling around the country giving workshops on how to care for your dead at home, just like our forebears used to do. And so that's now part of a burgeoning movement. I found coffin makers making coffins out of a whole host of biodegradable, really interesting materials: seagrass, wicker, bamboo, pine, sustainably harvested seagrass. And, there were backyard burials that were still taking place, and companies were helping families mix cremated remains into reef structures that were deposited offshore to augment existing reef or build new reef. So I felt it represented this shift in the way this next generation was going to approach its end of life.
You said that your trip down south to see this sort of like burial community in the woods really transformed the way you thought about death. How did it do that?
I think what it was is that this natural cemetery was a place of life, not death. Bodies were buried in the ground, as they are in any cemetery, right? But there was no evidence, there was no obvious evidence that a body was buried there. There are no upright headstones, there's no funerary statues. The only way you can tell that a body was buried there is by looking at the ground and seeing a small field stone that's laid at the gravesite. But what you do see is you see a southern pine forest in all of its glory. You see trees, you see vegetation, you see leaf litter, you see trails moving through the cemetery. So I think what I found it oddly affirming. So, you know, you go to a cemetery and it's an obvious place of death and mourning, but going into this wildland cemetery, you saw that death really was a part of the natural cycle of life. And while no one wants to pass away, there was a real sense through walking in this forest that, you know, what remains of you will in some ways truly live on.
What do you know about the history behind America having, it sounds like until very recently, one predominant mainstream type of laying to rest?
Right. So what we now call green burial, which is essentially the burial of an unembalmed body in a vaultless grave that's situated in a natural setting, this whole idea allowing the body to decay and rejoin the elements, that was the default burial for the first 150 years or so in this country's history. You often died at home or near home. Women of the house would wash and dress the body, lay it out in the front parlor or an unaided bedroom. Family and friends would come for service in the house or to sit with the deceased. Someone would be dispatched to dig a hole in the back 40 or the backyard, the community graveyard. A sexton would dig that grave. The local carpenter would pound out the plain pine box, or you'd buy one at the furniture store. And then there would be a service in the home, the church, and then finally at the graveyard, where the body would be lowered into the ground, where it would decompose naturally. There was no chemical embalming of the remains, no metal casket, no concrete burial vault sitting at the bottom of the grave. The body decayed and became part of the elements. This was green burial, and we did this until about the time of the Civil War. In the Civil War, most of the battles raged across battlefields of the rural South. Per tradition, bodies were buried on or near the battlefield where they fell. Northern families who wanted to retrieve the remains and bring them home for burial back in their home cemetery would send emissaries, and these could be friends or undertakers, to go and locate the deceased, disinter them in those shallow graves or take them from the hospital morgues and then put them in plain pine boxes and then put those boxes on rail cars that went north. Well, in the summer months, obviously, those bodies actively decomposed on the trip home, sometimes making for a very unpleasant arrival back in the home port. And it was at that point that battlefield surgeons began suggesting embalming as a way of preserving the remains for that long rail ride home. Embalming, of course, had been around for thousands of years, but for many reasons, it had not been adopted in this country, in part because our largely Christian country at that time thought that embalming represented a desecration of the human temple that was the human body, the human temple of God that was the human body. But the undeniable benefits of embalming during the Civil War, I think, really helped sell the practice to a population that had been wary of it. And then you have the embalming of Abraham Lincoln, where it's a very public viewing of Abraham Lincoln's remains. And I think Abraham Lincoln's embalming and funeral train really does even further soften that resistance.
So what do you think is inspiring people to look beyond what has become a traditional approach right now?
I think there are many, many reasons. One, I think that this movement so far has been largely, although not entirely, driven by the baby boom generation. This is the generation, those people born between 1946 and 1964, so 78 million Americans. I think this generation has taken a somewhat do-it-yourself approach to many of the facets of its life. And also a pro-environment look at things. And so I think as so we, you know, this generation wrote its own wedding vows. It it ushered in natural childbirth movement. It, you know, launched the first Earth Day in 1970 and what have you. So I think as this generation, which is now, you know, beginning to slouch into retirement and consider its mortality. Yeah, I'm among them. Is now beginning to consider its mortality and wants to bring and is bringing that same do-it-yourself mentality and pro-environment mindset to bear on end-of-life issues as it has on the other issues it has faced in its lifespan.
Well, I want to run through some of the alternatives that you chronicle in your book, get a sense of how they work and how common they're becoming on a national scale. But first, let me introduce our local guests so that with each of these approaches, we can find out whether Kansas City is adopting the trend. We'll probably skip the burial at sea, given that we don't have a sea. Eric Montegna is with us from the Meyerhofer Funeral Homes and Crematory in St. Joseph, Missouri. Hi, Eric.
Good morning.
And Brandon Schlitzer joins us from the Muehlbach Funeral Care here in Kansas City. Good morning, Brandon.
Good morning.
Brandon, in general, have there been big changes in the way your industry has worked with people over time?
Over time, you know, Kansas City's kind of, it's a different community when it comes to changes, I guess, in funeral industry. We have, you know, our cremation rate is starting to rise, but it's still not anywhere near some of like the West Coast cities. I think for us, we're at maybe about 35% cremation.
And we just heard that nationally, cremation has for the first time outpaced mm-hmm. burial.
Yeah, it's definitely the trend is shifting that way. You know, even maybe 5-10 years ago, we were at 15-20%. So in a short span, it's starting to gain traction here.
Is that what you're seeing, Eric?
In our community, it's about similar. The real change that we're seeing is not in how we take care of the deceased or the dead, but in how we engage and interact with the living. This may sound surprising to you, but only about 10% of what we do as funeral professionals is for the deceased. And so the real focus is on those left behind, those who have to address the different needs that will surface in their lives. And so that's the change that we've seen in our community.
And those needs would be a combination of practical, like really logistical stuff, and then emotional stuff.
There's emotional, relational, and spiritual needs that every family and everyone touched by death will encounter in the very first days and hours following a death. And the logistical needs are pretty self-evident. Everyone has a need to have their deceased removed, prepared if that's what they care for, and then eventually cremated, embalmed, buried, whatever a family chooses.
We'll get back to some of these needs of the families and that caregiving aspect with the living in a moment. But Brandon, I am curious about your comment that you're seeing an increase in cremation, not at the pace that we are nationally, but that you are seeing one. We've heard about some of maybe the environmental reasons why people might want to do that. Are you picking up on any other reasons that people are bringing to you?
I think a lot of times, and this is kind of a lot of people, and this is kind of hard to say and hard to fathom, but some people just see death as an inconvenience, to be honest with you. That's what we've run into a lot. You know, people don't want to deal with having, you know, to make all these arrangements, to have this full service. They kind of just want it to be done, and that's kind of where the shift is going. That's not the case for everybody, obviously, but it's starting to look more like that's kind of shifting it. And also, I think price is another factor. We just recently opened up a cremation society that all we do is just direct cremations. There's no service involved whatsoever, as opposed to our full service funeral home that, you know, will wash, dress, you know, the body so that the family can come view if they so desire. So those two factors are kind of, I think, swaying it a little bit. It's the funeral industry is just, it's a kind of a different animal. It's you can kind of look to the West Coast, I think, to see how things are shifting. That's kind of where it's starting to go. And everything else is going to eventually start to follow their trend, I believe.
KCUR's Central Standard is off to a break. When we return, we'll go through some new national trends in death and dying with our author on the line. Our local funeral home guys will tell us whether Kansas City is adopting them, and if not, why not? I'm Gina Kaufman. That's coming right up. Welcome back to KCUR's Central Standard. I'm Gina Kaufman. It's October, the month of Halloween and Day of the Dead, and this time of year, we're all just a little more aware of the fading of the light, so to speak. We've been talking about new trends in America's approach to death and dying with local funeral directors Brandon Schlitzer and Eric Montegna, as well as Mark Harris, author of Grave Matters, A Journey Through the Modern Funeral Industry to a Natural Way of Burial. So, Mark Harris, let's hone in on green funerals. First of all, there are a few different types out there, and you lay them out in your book. You have followed different families who are pursuing these things. Maybe name a couple of them that you think are particularly interesting.
They were all interesting to me, I think, because they involved the families and they were so beautifully and lovingly done. The one that sticks out, I think, for me was the funeral of Chris Nichols, a 28-year-old stonemason who passed away from colon cancer and was buried at Ramsey Creek, this national cemetery. What I think struck me about his funeral was that it was such a celebratory affair. Chris knew about Ramsey Creek, and he wanted to go back, as he said, to live among the worms at his passing. But when I learned about this funeral and wrote about it and interviewed people, it was again a celebratory affair. Death is hard, but I think there is again something about returning to a natural environment where your body is allowed to be reincorporated into the natural elements, where you are able to visibly see the effect of one's remains nourishing an environment. This idea that you could really live on, a part of you could nurture nature, and where you see life is just a part of death and death is a part of life, I think that's terribly affirming and also, in an odd way, very inspiring.
Brandon, are people coming to you with an interest in green burial options here in Kansas City? And if so, what specifically are they asking for?
It's in Kansas City, I don't think people have really grasped the concept of a green burial yet. We were talking outside earlier before we came into the studio that a lot of times during maybe possibly pre-arrangements, these families, they'll inquire about green burial, but they don't understand what they're really asking for, because basically, we'll kind of further ask what they really want by that. Do you want just to be put in the ground and just naturally decompose where there might not be too much as to
separate you from the elements?
Exactly. But a lot of times they still want the cemetery nice, mode. They want people to be able to come visit. So the whole what it boils down to is they are asking not to be embalmed. So the green burial aspect, I think, is just kind of a new concept in Kansas City, and not a lot of people truly understand the whole picture.
Is that the same experience you're having, Eric?
It certainly is. The vast majority of people in our community, 99.9% are buried or cremated. And there's no other options that people are pursuing or bringing to our forefront.
It's interesting to me. I mean, do you think that part of that is an attachment to tradition? Because that makes a lot of sense to me, actually. Like, death is one of those life cycle events that's full of ritual. It connects both the deceased and their grieving friends and family to something bigger, whether it's a spiritual belief system or a long line of generations who have lived and will live. So it makes sense that this is an area where tradition matters, where some people would want to be buried like their father and their grandfather before them. Is that part of what you see?
Tradition is very much an important part of that. But the final disposition is becoming less and less so. What's important is to honor and live the traditions that were important in your family and your community. Not as important is the decision whether you're buried, cremated, or another option.
Are there laws that regulate how, quote-unquote, natural a burial can be here in Kansas City, or St. Joe, as the case may be?
There are very few laws in the state of Missouri, of which I'm aware. Green burial is defined by statute, but other than that, it's a cemetery or a community issue.
So there isn't sort of like what you can and can't do? Because I would think that there could be concerns about people just digging a hole and putting someone in it, concerns about anything from foul play to just sanitary cleanliness, that kind of thing.
There are several shades of green, and I think our other guest would agree with that. The important thing is, you know, a funeral director does need to be involved, and that's where sanitation, that's where legal issues all come into play.
Mark, is that the case? Is that what you're seeing nationwide, or are there places where there are really stringent regulations? You'll have to forgive me by being tainted by having seen 6 feet under, where there are all sorts of sketchy things that happen out there when people dig their own graves.
There are also two wonderful green burials that happen in 6 feet under.
There
and
are.
I think that show probably advertised green burial to the mainstream more than anything else that has come since. I'm glad we have such good funeral directors on the show. I mean, I've been very supportive of funeral directors, and I appreciate the hard work and often unacknowledged work they do for our communities. And in fact, I give separate presentations to funeral directors encouraging them to go green. And here's the reason. When I go around the country and I have funeral directors tell me this, that we don't see green burial happening much in our community. And it is true. We are at the beginning of a movement. If you chart the beginning of the green burial movement in this country from 1998, which is the first the establishment of Ramsey Creek in South Carolina, you're looking at, you know, less than 20 years. But I think as this movement grows, I think you're going to see a lot more natural cemeteries out there. You're going to see more death care midwives offering their services. You're going to see more
death care midwives.
Yes, we can talk about it in a second. But if you look at even the surveys now, so surveys back in 2007 suggested that a quarter of those surveyed expressed some interest in green burial. Well, this year there was a survey out, 2015, that said 64% of those surveyed are interested, who are over 40, are interested in a green burial. That's an increase over 43% who were surveyed in 2010. So I think there is this train coming down the track. We're starting to see the first indications of real interest. But I think as this people in their 40s, they, you know, have good years ahead of them, I think that we are going to see green burial slowly make its way into the mainstream.
Let's talk to Jim in Lenexa. Hi, Jim.
Good morning. Thank you for taking my call.
Thanks for joining
us. When I phoned in, I spoke to your director, and from that time, your guests have pretty much gone over much of what I had in mind and some of my questions. And I guess at this point, the only question I would have, because they've answered just about everything, is are there cemeteries in the Kansas City or, say, in Kansas and or Missouri that do accept green burials on a regular basis? And I'll take my answer off here. Thank you.
Okay, thanks, Jim.
Yeah, so in the Kansas City area, there's three, and it's not really in the Kansas City area, but in Kansas and Missouri, that are relatively close, which would be an option for the families that we serve. There's one in Lansing, Kansas. There's one in Columbia, Missouri. And there's one in Lawrence, Kansas. So, and that's probably the other issue, too, that probably doesn't spark the interest in the green burials, is that there's not really anything in the metropolitan area that is available for this. So there's it's just that the population isn't really educated, because it's not a big thing here yet. And that's one of the biggest things as a funeral director, is you try to educate, you know, the general population of all the options the best that you can. So
this idea of how a grave site is marked in this world is an interesting one. What do we know about that? I mean, Mark, can you talk to us about how people find that? Can people find their way back to their loved one's site in the absence of all of the dressings?
Yes, well, it's a very interesting question. I mean, and it's a debate within green burial circles. Some cemeteries, natural cemeteries, request that families use a biodegradable grave marker. So a field stone, a river rock, something that will biodegrade within a couple hundred years or 100 years even. And there is some debate as to whether or not there should be something more permanent, as you have in most other cemeteries, although granted, nothing's permanent, right? But something more enduring than a river rock. So, and then there are some natural cemeteries who do believe that that is, it's important for families to go back and actually see a marker. So they, some of these cemeteries do have more permanent granite, markers. They still lay flush to the ground. You still see plants and you know, vegetation, but there is something permanent that you can return to. I'm part of a helped establish a natural cemetery near my hometown here in eastern Pennsylvania, and it is true. There's a meadow. It's a meadowland, and there is a little bit of walking through a meadow to find a gravesite. So it's a different way of experiencing a cemetery. And it's a different way of memorializing our dead. But there are variations even within the green definition of green.
Let's talk to Shirley in Kansas City, Missouri. Hi, Shirley.
Yes, hello. Thank you for taking my call. I just wanted to express myself being a person of keen interest in a green burial, my husband and myself being baby boomers and are interested in the ecologically more positive way to dispose of a body, and are very dismayed, really, that there is no option here in Kansas City. We did the research. We went to visit the site in Lawrence, which is operated by Parks and Recreation. But I think that part of the problem is that the funeral industry are not really promoting it or offering it as a suggestion because it's really not a moneymaker for them. I mean, the traditional funeral is the third highest cost purchase cost that a family can make after a house and a car. So it's something that they're probably not interested in from a financial standpoint. And it's just not clear to me why local cemeteries cannot just offer a space within their grounds reserved for the green burial option.
Well, we've got a couple of local funeral directors here who can maybe address that. Eric?
Well, you know, a green burial doesn't necessarily mean an expensive burial. You know, I don't have a lot of experience in green burials, but, you know, funeral homes and cemeteries are businesses, and no one likes to hear that, but we have to remain profitable to continue to offer the services we do. Certainly, you know, if there were a way to do it and there were enough interest, it would be a good business proposition for someone to look at. But again, it's not if you build it, they will come always. Sometimes there has to be enough interest to pursue it.
Yeah, and we have a few options available for families if they are interested in this that we've kind of recently, because we know it's I mean, trends change all the time. So we try to keep as much available for families as possible. Because we are a business, like you said, but we're in the service industry. I mean, we want to serve the families the best that we possibly can. So we actually have some urns. As of right now, it's just urns that we hold that are biodegradable and that actually have seeds from flowers in them. So when it decomposes, the theory is that, you know, a flower bed or a little garden would grow where that person would be buried. So there are some options. It's just there's not a lot of demand for it right now, which is why we don't really push it, I guess.
Do you, do you find that different faith groups respond differently to these different kinds of options? And if so, how so?
Yeah, so each faith group obviously has their own set of customs that they all have to abide by or for example, the closest to a green burial that we would probably have here in Kansas City is the Orthodox Jewish faith. They actually have, which would be available to other families if they would like this, but their caskets have to be completely made of a natural substance. Usually it's a wood casket, no metal pieces. And the burial vault at the cemetery actually is a special design to where there's a hole at the bottom because they believe in the, you know, ashes to ashes, dust to dust, everything returns back to the earth. So over a period of time, because of that large, cutout of that burial vault, it will decompose. Obviously, you're still having to use a burial vault because around here, that's what the cemeteries require. But that's the closest option that we see, and that's because of that faith.
Mark, how do you see faith playing into the many different kinds of green burials that you witnessed, that you observed?
Green burial plays very well into most green burials. So Jewish burial is green burial, you know, the burial of an unembalmed body wrapped in a shroud and then placed in a wood casket that sometimes has holes drilled into it to invite the elements. The Jews have been burying their dead green since time immemorial. Same is true for Muslims. Muslims also place bodies, wrap them in shrouds, and then bury them directly in the earth, no embalming. So, and if you include, and then Christian burial, interestingly, in the book I write about one of the most non-green funerals and burials, and that's of someone who's given a Catholic send-off. But now here you have Catholic dioceses across the country opening green burial grounds. It certainly hews to Christian tradition. Christ was given a green burial, laid in a tomb, wrapped in a shroud, right? So it hews very nicely to tradition. Now, I include a cremation within my my spectrum of green burial options. It's certainly on the low end of green send-offs. But if you include cremation, then you're looking at all Hindu populations, looking at some sort of green burial. And then, of course, you can take the cremated remains, and return them to a natural environment. It can be your backyard, it can be a forest, or you know what have you. There are some regulations on some of that, but you can return it to sea. So many faiths, pagans, Wiccans, are opening green cemeteries within their grounds. So faith has not really been a deterrent to green burial.
You know, before we go, I do want to come back to Eric's comment about so much of what you do in the funeral industry involving the living. And earlier in the show, we heard about classes for youngsters, helping them understand what death is so their grieving parents don't have to deal with that on top of everything else they're already dealing with. We've also done a show on what's called a death cafe, a safe space to talk about death without feeling self-conscious about needing to work through it. Does this kind of thing reflect a larger philosophical shift?
It does, certainly. And there's really three parts to it. Most people don't know a lot about death. Don't know a lot about how to plan a funeral or a cremation or whatever they want to do. So the first component is education. And that's what everyone really needs to be involved in, is finding out, talking about what end-of-life issues they need to. The second piece is engaging with other people. And that's critical. And the last piece is really about how do you transition and find a new normal in your life following a death.
Brandon, Eric, Mark, thanks so much for your time. Brandon Schlitzer is with the Muehlbach Funeral Home. Eric Montegna is with Meyerhofer Funeral Homes and Crematory. And Mark Harris is the author of Grave Matters. There will be a screening of the movie Death Makes Life Possible at Union Station this Thursday at 6. When we come back, let's go Royals.